Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. In Washington, the House debates a Democratic proposed resolution that would limit the president's ability to engage in hostilities against Iran. Here's Speaker Nancy Pelosi a little while ago.
To protect American lives and values, we are passing today a war powers resolution to limit the president's military actions. The administration must de-escalate and must prevent further violence. America and the world cannot afford war.
And the speaker also weighed in on when she might send the articles of impeachment over to the Senate.
I'll send them over when I'm ready. And that will probably be soon. We want to see what they're willing to do and the manner in which they will do it. But we will not let them say, oh, this is just like Clinton, fair is fair. It's not.
So joining us to talk about all of that here in Studio 3 is WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner. She is a retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Always good to be here.
I feel like we've been doing this impeachment thing for a long time.
I think we have.
Yeah. Let's actually start with Iran, because we've got this thing going on with Iran and this question of presidential powers. House is expected to vote later this afternoon on a resolution which would limit the president's powers under the War Powers Resolution of 1973. What does the Constitution say in general about presidential powers in terms of war, when force can be used, who authorizes it, et cetera?
It doesn't say much, but it says that the direct declaration of war has to come from Congress. It is not something the president can do himself. Now, the issue is, what comprises war? The last formal declaration of war was, you know, I think it was either this World War II or the Korean War. There are all sorts of hostilities short of war, which presidents have, you know, have said that they have the right to engage in. So that's the question. Now, the open question here is whether a targeted assassination of someone who, however good or bad, mostly bad, was a member of the administration in Iran comprises an act of war and therefore should have been done with the formalities that the Constitution requires.
So it could, in fact, be not just the ability to declare war, but if one essentially triggers by an act of war, that might require congressional oversight as well.
Right, but this is an open question. I mean, during the Cold War, there were all sorts of hostilities between the United States and the Soviet Union, which didn't obviously comprise a formal declaration of war, triggering alliances and all sorts of things, but much short of that. And the question is whether in that sort of continuum of action short of a formal declaration of war, Congress should have a role and what that role should be.
Okay, so the administration briefed Congress yesterday, and we've heard some different responses to the sufficiency of that briefing. But one of the things that we have heard is people saying the message to us was, if you question this, you are aiding and abetting the enemy, essentially. The Constitution, I feel like it must have something to say about
that. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all, because the question of what you do in advance of hostilities and then how you investigate afterwards are two separate questions. Congress certainly has a right to investigate the use of power and the circumstances surrounding it or the failure to use power. That's what the Benghazi hearings were about, after all. So the notion that questioning the president's decision is in some way treasonous is not just ridiculous, but inconsistent with checks and balances, fundamentally inconsistent with checks and balances.
I was going to move on, but I want to ask one more thing on that. It also seems like the price we pay to be in an open democracy, that we're in fact then going to debate publicly things that we wish maybe other people couldn't hear or see. But it's the nature of our beast, right?
Right. And there are variations of public. I mean, you're talking about the norm was to brief the Gang of Eight, those members of the House and Senate that were in positions of leadership before the action. And that would not have been public in the usual sense.
But that didn't happen.
That didn't happen. And then there's briefing afterwards. And there are gradations of how much the administration can share publicly. But not to share anything and to suggest that criticizing the president is somehow aiding and abetting the enemy, it's really not, it's beyond ridiculous. It's dangerous.
Although I will also say, I don't feel like this is the only administration we've heard that from. I feel like we've heard that during times of conflict. I go back to, you know, after 9/11. I think we heard it then, too.
We may have heard it, that this has to be sort of part of a pattern of conduct of a president who has essentially undermined the House processes with respect to impeachment, with the House investigative processes short of impeachment, the subpoenas of tax records, et cetera. So it really is a view of executive power, which is, although it's been robust in prior administrations, a view of executive power that is way beyond what others have done.
Okay, I want to move on to impeachment here. It seems like we're at a point where probably soon the Senate will have its rules and the House Speaker will turn over the articles of impeachment. I want to play a couple of clips here from last week, and I want to get your reaction to them in tandem. First is Senator Susan Collins of Maine.
It is inappropriate, in my judgment, for senators on either side of the aisle to prejudge the evidence before they have heard what is presented to us, because each of us will take an oath that I take very seriously, to render impartial justice. That's what it says, impartial justice.
So then we have a clip from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The oath that senators take in impeachment trials has never meant that senators should wall themselves off from the biggest news story in the nation and completely ignore what the House has been doing. The oath has never meant that senators check all of their political judgment at the door and strip away all of our independent judgment about what is best for the nation.
Kind of feel like both of those things are true. Can both of those things be true?
I think that they both are true. The Senate takes an oath to be impartial, to do impartial justice, which is different than their oath as senators. So what does it mean in this setting? They clearly know what the case is about. They're not like the ordinary juror in an ordinary case who comes in and is asked, do you know anything about this case? And if you know stuff about the case they're about to try, could be disqualified. They clearly come to the table with what they know about it. They come to the table with their judgments. So it is a relative impartiality. They are, as one professor of mine said, to be as free as may be of partisan political motives and pressures, to do the best they can, to be more jury-like than legislator-like.
Okay, to be as free as they may be from partisan and political motives.
Right.
Right? Did I remember that correctly? Okay, so that raises a question that I've been thinking. Doesn't that suggest that senators who stand to personally gain from the president being convicted, meaning senators running for president, Sanders, Warren, Klobuchar, Booker, Harris even, recuse themselves?
Well, if the scholars of the Constitution have addressed that as well. So there were always bound to be people who wanted the president's position in the Senate. We have a tradition of that. McConnell himself announced that he's not impartial. I think if people who were partial disqualified themselves, then we would have a terribly troubling situation, which is the impeachment of a president decided by a very small group of people. So I think the answer is no, they shouldn't disqualify themselves. I think the answer is you try to be as fair as you can possibly be under the circumstances, recognizing that senators, those sworn to be impartial, are not exactly like jurors.
All right. So let's, in our remaining time, let's talk about this question of fair is fair. We heard Nancy Pelosi refer to it in the lead. Mitch McConnell has been arguing that the Senate can start the trial without witnesses because in the Clinton administration impeachment, they started the trial without witnesses, and fair is fair. At the same time, in the Clinton impeachment, the subpoenas were honored in the House, and so there had been witnesses somewhere. Can you have a quality execution of the entire impeachment process if there are no witnesses at any stage? Is that possible?
I think that I can't give the answer in the abstract. Certainly, that would be where one of the articles of impeachment is obstruction of justice for not providing administration officials to testify before the House. You're keeping the Senate from hearing the most relevant evidence to the cause at hand, to the impeachment.
Yeah. And I should clarify, there were witnesses in the House, just not these primary.
That's right. And so I think the issue is if you say that the Well, they're saying two things. McConnell and others have said, one, we don't want witnesses, as there weren't witnesses in the Clinton case. And in addition, we don't have to have live witnesses. We can't have any additional evidence than the evidence in the House. The latter point, additional evidence than the evidence in the House, is flatly wrong. The House is like a grand jury making accusations. The Senate is essentially trying those accusations, and is oftentimes in any trial, the Senate tries facts supporting the accusations that may or may not have been heard by the grand jury. So it can be additional evidence. And then on the question of witnesses, trials involve witnesses. And in this particular case, the relevant witnesses have been barred from testifying by the president.
Okay. And we're going to have to stop there. WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School, thank you so much for coming.
You're very welcome.